John Podcast Network.
Do we have like an intro? Do we have a bit?
I mean, do you want me to tell my not so clean joke? It's about a monkey.
Oh, it's like a joke. This is just like a joke that exists.
Yes.
Oh, this isn't like. Okay.
That's why I could go anywhere.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Go ahead.
Well, what if we imagine you're a carny hunter and you're like, step right up.
Step right up. See, the world's jokiest joke. What's the joke?
So a man walks into a bar with a monkey on his shoulder. And he puts the monkey down on the pool table while he goes to get himself a drink. And the monkey climbs up onto the table and eats the cue ball. Now the barman, you know, is furious because how else are people going to play pool? So he's like, hey man, you better get your monkey. And he goes, okay. And he takes the monkey and he leaves. Nothing is heard from the man and the monkey for a week. The man comes back to the bar with the monkey. This time comes up to the bar, puts the monkey on the bar beside him, starts to order a drink. The barman's like, I remember you from last week, you know, and the guy's like, it's not going to be a problem. Don't worry about it. The monkey reaches over to the bowl of peanuts, takes one, pops it into his butt, pops it back out and eats it. And the bartender goes, did you just see what that guy did? Like what that monkey did? Like, that's gross. And, you know, guy's like, well, after that cue ball, he checks every time. No? Really? Fine, cut it out.
Oh, no, I'm leaving it. I'm also leaving the deafening silence.
Oh, my God. Fine. Never telling you a joke again.
Yeah, what's your second best monkey joke?
I don't have one. Hello, excellent humans.
Hello, excellent humans. Hello, excellent humans. Welcome to another monkey-related episode of Hate Watch, Great Watch. I'm your co-host, Hunter Bush. With me, as always, Joke Master.
Oh, my God. I'm your co-host, Allison Yacoulis, the Joke Master.
And our returning guest,
Aiden.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to the show, Aiden.
It's good to be back. Clowns.
Thank you. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
We're just clowning around.
Yep. Can't even argue with this.
It's a bunch of monkey business.
Well, you picked this movie, Aiden. Why?
I just can't get enough of the carnival. I don't know. Can't explain it. I keep going back to it. I just love the carnival and circus, everything. I don't know. I'm really into the aesthetic, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Like in film or just in general?
In general. Yeah.
Yeah, we sent you the list of like films that we have, and this is, you picked this.
Oh, yeah.
Just for the carnival vibes?
Just for that, yep.
Had you ever seen this before?
Never.
I found out that this was done on Mystery Science Theater. Did you know that? No. I did not know that either. I don't think I ever saw it.
No.
Chances are they found the same things funny that we did. Odd little movie.
Yeah, I think it was just the title. I didn't really know anything about it. I didn't really look into it. I just saw the title on your list.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's rated G.
I was going to say, I don't think it would be G today, though.
No, but it's not like awful.
No, it's
PG.
No. Yeah.
You know, too much potential animal death and a little bit of blood and a lot of hitting ladies.
Oh, yeah.
And
not
some
needed.
Car mischief.
Yeah, the car stuff is fine, except for I think somebody probably really died in that one stunt.
What, where the red car just disappears?
Yes! like, okay, we've seen this monkey. Spoilers, there's a monkey in this movie. And he steals a car. So he's driving down the road, and we just keep seeing cars like swerve off the road, and they just kind of go into a field, and then they're like, you crazy monkey. And they like shake their hat at him, right? As he drives away with a woman in the backseat. But then this one car just like swerves and kind of goes off the road, except what looks like bushes and trees is actually all trees with a sheer drop. And you're like, oh, those aren't bushes that are like short and low to the ground. Those are the tops of trees. So this fucking car disappears off this drop. And then you just see a tree vanish because it crushed it on the way down. And I was like, holy shit. That guy died.
Yeah.
I hope not, actually, but that's a gnarly fucking stunt.
I know.
Whew.
Probably put a monkey in that car to do the stunt. Like, I mean,
a spare one they had lying around.
Who are we kidding?
The one with the bad attitude.
Yeah, the one that didn't show up for his call time.
Beppo. Beppo's drunk again. All right, he's the stunt monkey. Oh, so this is my favorite scene, though, is when the monkey steals the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the best scene in the movie. This should be the whole movie. Not just this one car chase, but just, like, it should be monkey hijinks more than it is. It's actually, like...
a lot of relationship dramas.
It's really melodramatic, and at the end, it is, like a child's idea of a message movie about how experimenting on animals is bad.
Yeah. Ooh, actually, parts of this remind me of another, like, carnival movie, Seven Faces of Dr. Lau.
I haven't seen that either.
That's a good movie, but it is un-PC.
Yeah. It's based off of a book, and it was at a time where, like, you know...
if you were a white man, you were allowed to play any race you'd like.
Right.
So it's what's-his-name from...
I'm not going to be in
The Odd Couple. Tony Randall.
Tony Randall, yeah. Yes. In that film, it's this sort of mystical carnival, and it's Dr. Lau playing all these different, like, monster characters. They have Medusa and Tiresias and Hydra or whatever. But so it's also helping people in this town, like, kind of get over some of their, like, emotional hang-ups in different ways. And so it's making everybody better people, and that's kind of what's happening in Carnival Magic, is, like, everybody's, you know, getting some of their, like, interpersonal drama resolved.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Men and women of the early 80s would rather have a Carnival Magic than go to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Lau, it's Tony Randall, but he, at points, Dr. Lau is an Asian gentleman. So it's Tony Randall doing an Asian gentleman impression. Which, again, like, the movie's not bad. And it's besides the inherent racism in what I just said, isn't racist. It's a character he's doing, because he's like, oh, they'll buy it being...
yes.
Asian mysticism, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but there's Asian mysticism in this.
Yes.
And it's my favorite, like, one sentence of backstory in the whole thing, where we get all this backstory we didn't know we needed.
Yeah, David's like the ad man for the carnival, and he's like, oh, Magnificent Markov the Magnificent, like, I heard you know, came from India. And he's like, yes, you know, I was raised by Buddhist monks from Nepal. Right. My parents were missionaries and they were killed
by the Japanese.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a lot to deliver in one sentence.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's baffling that that is his backstory. But it has to be, because he's a white guy. Don Stewart, who is pretty good in this. Mm-hmm. I like him. The guy has charisma. So I own this, and it's a dual feature disc with Lost, which is also directed. I should do the nitty gritty. So the nitty gritty for this movie. Carnival Magic, 1983, rated G. It's an hour and 26 minutes. Directed by Al Adamson. So like I said, I own this. It's on a disc with another Al Adamson movie from 1983. I guess these are his two final films.
So this was after Lost, right?
No, because... I think Lost was after this.
I think he did this
to finance Lost, or partially finance Lost.
Because Lost is the one he wanted to do.
I guess, yeah, from what I can piece together. Lost is like a little girl in the wilderness movie. It's like a Lifetime. It's like a Disney type film. It was bought by Fox, whatever the company was, and re-released under a different title where it was like a modest hit. But, and it's fine. But I guess, yeah, he really wanted to make that. So Al Adamson kind of practiced a similar, on his own, he was kind of a Lloyd Kaufman type, you know, of like, hey, let's shoot it fast and cheap and get it done and get it out there. He was responsible for like 35 features in about 23 years or so.
It's not a bad average.
No.
And a lot of them were done independently, because he did what you were saying, do one for you, one for
me. That he does sort of like the Steven Soderbergh one for you, one for me kind of thing, where he would be a gun for hire just to get work, and then maybe, you know, make enough money from that job or be in the good graces of a studio to help produce or release or, you know, finance a project he wanted to work on. So I think, from what I understand, he did this partially to finance releasing Lost. And those ended up being his two final films, and they're on this disc that I got from maybe Vinegar Syndrome?
Yes.
Hey, listeners, a correction. It's actually a Severin release. Now back to the episode. And it's good. It's a good transfer. Looks good. Sounds decent.
Yeah, I read in trivia this was a lost film until a print was found in 1995.
Oh.
Yeah.
Apparently at the time, the theater was owned by like punks, guys in their 20s who were all in the punk scene. Mm-hmm. And at night they would illegally have punk shows there.
Yeah.
Some band was playing and, you know, they would just randomly play shit on the screen behind them. So they projected this movie and apparently it was so weird that everybody kind of stopped paying attention to the music and was just watching the movie to be like, what the fuck is this? And that started a whole thing where it became like a midnight movie.
I also read that this had played on like Turner Classic Movies had like a
it's played on Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah.
This?
Yes.
Wow.
I love it.
For like, you know, again, some like, you know, midnight special or something like that thing that they were doing.
I can see that. I don't know a ton about Al Adamson. One of the boutique labels put out a box set of his stuff a few years ago, but I did not pick it up because I'm just not familiar with him. I know a couple of titles that he worked on, but after seeing this, I'm like, I'm kind of more interested now doing this like tertiary research into like, who was Al Adamson? Well, how did, you know, what is the story with this film? He seems, you know, like we always talk about on the show, like, we like these American originals, these, you know, these filmmakers, not even American, but just these filmmakers who are just like, yeah, I can make that. I can get that done. And it's like, oh, is it going to look great? It's like, shut up. It's like, it's not important if it looks great.
It was kind of an ambitious movie to make, I guess.
Yeah.
For him.
1983, it's riding on the coattails of the late 70s, early 80s craze of chimps and apes in cinema.
Oh, here we go. Subgenre.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Apes have always been popular. Planet of the Apes, the fourth of the new franchise, just came out, and apparently it's quite popular, and Allison and I are 4 out of 5 deep on the original franchise rewatch.
I feel like we should talk about the tropes of monkey movies. You know, driving cars, kissing their main protagonist.
Well, it's what it comes down to is what can you get a monkey to do realistically?
Yeah.
Which is why the scene in this where Markov the Magnificent finally unveils, you know, that he has a secret chimp who is like great at everything and does whatever he's told. The scene is like Markov showing it to the carnival owner Stoney.
Stoney is delighted watching this monkey sweep the floor and pour orange juice.
Right, and comb his hair wrong. And and I'm just like, I get that this is a movie and it takes a certain amount of, you know, distance from reality to be like, sure. But like, he is wide-eyed.
Giddy.
Right, like the monkey is, you know, a Benihana chef.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, holy shit, he could do that, like...
It reminds me of the Dr. Doolittle selling the push me pull you to the guy, and you get the musical number of I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Stoney's reaction. And like the actor playing Stoney, Mark Weston, who is actually also one of the co-writers.
Yes.
He's pretty good.
Yeah.
He has like 2 scenes where he has to really express any kind of emotion, and he sells really well in both of them. But yeah, it's so funny him being like, he's got this look of like, holy shit, can you believe that monkey's holding a comb? Like, it's like, yeah, dude, they're basically like humans. They're tool manipulating animals. Like, they can hold combs. Like, he's not combing his hair right. Like,
where's
he's not styling it. It's not like the scene in Ferris Bueller. Like, he's not all of a sudden like, I got a mohawk now. He's just running a comb through his monkey hair. And this guy's like, get the fuck out of here. Are you serious? And the monkey, like, carries a glass jug of orange juice. And he's like, holy shit. All right, buddy. Which I said while we're watching it. That pretty much nails down exactly how piss poor this carnival is. If this act is, he's like, oh my God, this is going to make money hand over fist.
Yeah, they got like 17 fucking tigers. And everybody's like, I want to see that monkey, like, hand somebody a candy bar.
But no one commented that the monkey was wearing jeans.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Guys, we're burying the lead. The monkey speaks English.
Yes.
Yeah, well.
The monkey talks, and that's not the thing that he's freaking out about.
No.
The monkey's like, yeah, I guess I gotta comb my hair. And he's like, that monkey's got a comb! And it's like, he spoke English. He said, like, a coherent thought. Like, he responds to questions. He, like, you know, he cracks wise.
Yeah.
He's like, it's like 1 or 2 syllables. It's not like he's not up there doing Shecky Green shtick or whatever, but he's like,
yuck.
Yeah, he's like, yuck. Later on, I mentioned he kidnaps this woman in a car, and she's like, let me out of here. He's like, you hungry? And she's like, what? Let me pull over. Let me out of this car. And then he sees a fruit stand. He's like, a fruit salad. And then he's like, it's not like he's parroting shit or whatever, but even if he was just parroting shit, Monkeys don't usually do that. Yeah. That's interesting enough to build a sideshow act around.
But he didn't say anything about
that. Nobody does. Nobody, because I guarantee the monkey speaking is an afterthought. That's not even in this movie. I just don't see it. Nobody freaks out. Nobody's like, that monkey is doing monkey, like, you trained him well, but he's not doing anything other monkeys can't be taught to do, but he is speaking English.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's actually interesting that you said that, that it might have been an afterthought, because there was a lot of the time where Alex the monkey was not moving his mouth.
No. They're not trying to.
No.
We watched an episode of Lancelot Link, which is the premium monkey moving its mouth while somebody does a voice over top of it example in pop culture. If you have not seen Lancelot Link, maybe don't, because it is racist. I saw it as a child on, I want to say, like, Nick at Night or, you know, TV Land or something, but I did not realize the level to which it was very racist.
That was my first time.
But they famously gave the monkeys, like, a lot of gum to chew to get them to flap their gums a lot, and then they had actors doing, like, Humphrey Bogart impressions be like, "That's right, sweetheart. I'm Lancelot Link. I'm a monkey, private eye," or whatever the fuck. I can't talk about Lancelot Link. There's too much to talk about. We have to talk about carnival magic. Okay. So, as I said, directed by Al Adamson, and he did all these films. So, he kind of apparently did, like, a one for you, one for me to get stuff made. And this was his final thing that a studio wanted made. And it was, they were chasing the, box office dragon. I guess it has to be from any which way you but loose?
Every which way but
every
loose.
Which way but any loose, which way any you which can. Way you can, right. Which are two movies where Clint Eastwood pals around with an orangutan named Clyde.
They're amazing.
And he is a bare-knuckle boxer in both of them. And is it that he slept with the wrong woman? Is that why Clint, is that why the motorcycle gang is after him? Did he sleep with somebody's, like, wife or ex-wife or girlfriend or something?
I mean, because
he's
kind of a poon hound. It's a Clint Eastwood movie, so he slept with somebody.
Oh, yeah,
but whether or not that's
people.
Plot relevant is the question.
Yeah, I can't remember why the... Do you remember why the...
I'm trying to remember.
Why the gang is after... This is motorcycle gang after him in at least one of them, if not both. He's not racist enough.
No, like, yeah, well, Clint and Clyde start messing with them while they're driving on the road. Like, it's some, like, little, like, road rage thing that, like...
Hey, Clyde! Why don't you throw one of your bananas at that big neo-Nazi galoot?
Essentially, I mean...
Well, it looks like we're in for about 2 hours of shenanigans. That's the plot of the film.
It's amazing.
Future episode, question mark?
Probably.
I'd watch it.
Probably. I love doing a Clint impression, and...
I love your Clint
terrible, thank you. And I love terrible movies with monkeys in them. Which is probably any movie with a monkey in it.
Yeah.
What other ape? Well, there was BJ and the Bear, which I tried to find an episode of on YouTube and couldn't, which is a shame. Because it's even crazier than I remember. I might have seen an episode of it, like, here or there in my life. But I just know of it culturally. Because I was like, oh, he's a long-haul trucker that for some reason drives around with a chimp. But then the trailer for, I guess, the first episode was like, plus he's a former helicopter pilot from Vietnam. And I was like, wait, what? That's fucking crazy. And he's like shipping a cargo container full of women fleeing from white slavery. And I was like, this was BJ and the fucking Bear? Are you serious? Is this real? So I don't remember any of that shit. What if the A-Team was only one guy and, shut up, wait for it, a chimpanzee? I don't know. That's crazy. And you mentioned Monkey Shines.
Yeah.
That was a few years after this, but not long. Like 88,
I don't
maybe?
Know,
or something
like that.
Yeah.
Before, not in the 90s, I don't think.
No, no.
Yeah.
Because the 90s have their own monkey era.
Yeah, like Dunstan Checks In.
Dunstan, that's the big one. Because, well, the 90s had exotic animal fever.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was like Dunstan Checks In. You got the Free Willies. There was that. Is it called Zeus and Roxanne?
Oh,
which
yeah.
is about a friendship between a dog and a dolphin.
Yep.
And then there was the Flipper movie in the early 90s and, like, all those.
Right.
So that's the 90s. But in the 80s, we were still, like, we were in between the Planet of the Apes, which was, like, late 60s, early 70s, and Gorillas in the Mist, late 80s, early 90s somewhere, where we started taking, you know, monkeys, like, seriously and being like, ah, conservation for the apes and their habitats. Mm-hmm. And then we briefly made Congo.
Oh, yeah.
Congo's good.
I don't remember if I saw that or not. I definitely saw trailers for it, I think.
Anyway, carnival magic. Let's talk about carnival magic.
Yes.
What is the plot of this film? Aiden, you...
Well, I think it's interesting that a lot of the plot has to do with the backstory of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, A lot of it happens.
The movie is filled out with people being like, did you know I have a backstory?
Yeah.
And someone else being like, how interesting, I have a backstory of my own.
Like, a lot of it is just people explaining their past, and then they do funny things.
We don't really
get
any...
Debatable on how funny they are.
We don't really get any backstory for Alex, aside from, like, he was with
he's a monkey
for a while, and is a monkey. Yeah.
What else do you need?
That's all you need? Okay. Yeah. All right, fine, fair.
But, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know if he was, like, a circus monkey, or maybe he was, like, a former, like, Soviet space monkey that landed, and and then Markov found him.
Do you think the main plot has to do with the scientist? Because he comes in, like, past the, like, the middle of the movie.
Well, that's the plot. Okay.
You see him standing in the crowd shots during performances.
But you can't miss him.
It's they don't call attention to him, though.
No.
No, but you can't miss him. He looks weird.
No, he's writing notes, and everyone's, he like... is. Bored or laughing.
Yes, everybody else looks like they're at a carnival watching a magic show. Like, they're kind of bored, kind of smiling. Like, oh, yeah, this is fun. And this guy has, like, wildly intense eyes, and he's writing notes, and you're like, okay, that guy's important, or the weirdest extra that's ever been in something.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, part of my favorite part of this movie was, like, this is a great people-watching movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can just look at the extras and have fun.
Yeah,
lot,
yeah.
A lot of the extras staring down the center of the camera.
A lot of them.
Oh, yeah.
Are just like...
I think they didn't know what to do half the time.
No. You could see people in the audience who would glance at it really quickly before they clapped. And it's like, just clap. You're good. Just ignore it. Anyway. This movie has television season syndrome, which is to say the beginning matters and the end matters and the middle is kind of nonsense, but like it's the most fun part.
But you were like, we didn't need it, really.
No, no. It doesn't have any... Nothing that happens in probably the whole second... reel of the second act of the film,
because that's just
affects
when
anything. And in fact, it seems like it should, because traditional story structure would have them in the second act introduce something that matters to the end. And there are two things that happen where you're like, okay, this is gonna come back later. One is the monkey steals a car, so we know he knows how to drive.
Right.
And the other thing is Markov makes a man bend steel with like his mental powers. They show all, not a whole like magic show, but like a big long segment in the second act is watching an entire magic show of Markov's, where he does not just magic tricks, like they do the, you know, lady gets in the box and they divide it with the, you know, the big like guillotine cutter things, and then they open it and she's fine, you know.
The lady mix them up.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, they do that. That's a traditional magic trick. They do the Markov lays down under a blanket and he hovers and there's no wires under him. You know, that kind of thing, whatever.
That's Alex's favorite trick. So, he brings a guy up to Ben's steel bars. He can't do it. And he goes, your name is Clarence, right? And he goes, oh, yeah, how'd you know? And obviously it's because he's Clarence Voyant. All right. But no, and then he's like, you know, kind of hypnotizes him and goes, you know, well, you're Gus now, and you can bend steel bars. Can you bend this bar? And he goes, yes, and he does it.
Yeah.
And so now that guy's got a split personality that he didn't have before.
Right. And for, you know, the magic tricks, you're like, I don't know how they did it, but I know it's a magic trick. That doesn't seem to be a magic trick. That seems like the kind of thing you can only do either with A, actual mysticism, or B, plants in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like either way, showing us that whole thing would have to be setting something up for the third act. Either way. Either, like, I've had plants here the whole time, and they know where Alex is. You know, they know where the lab is, or whatever, or something. Or I can hypnotize men and make them do things. And any of that would come back in the end when they have to rescue Alex. But none of it does.
Well, I thought it was it had to do with tying into the whole thought transference, where they can, like, feel each other, maybe.
Yeah, but that's just vague Eastern mysticism, which he's shown the whole movie, because he he talks to the cats, the big cat, what's the big cat trainer guy,
Kirk Wilder,
played by Joe Cirillo, who I looked him up. He's been in a couple of movies you may have seen. He's been in Ghostbusters,
mm-hmm.
one of the maniac cops, Splash,
oh yeah,
and Death Wish 3.
Oh,
he's been in all of those and other films as cops, everyone, every single one. He's like sergeant whoever, or police sergeant, or officer, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Everyone, he's a cop. But in this, he's not a cop. He's a cat trainer. And he's got all these tigers.
They should have given him a wig, because the one time that they show somebody actually lion taming or whatever, they have very, like, much, like, noticeably longer, wavier hair than Joe Cirillo does.
Yeah. It's not even close.
Yeah.
Is that when he gets attacked, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because you really don't see him doing his show that much. He's just kind of spiraling where he's getting woken up in, like, a nest of empty bottles and stuff.
Yeah, so I guess his arc is he was the number one draw at this failing carnival.
Is a diva.
With his big cat show, where it's like 7 or 8 tigers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be it.
And he's jealous.
And yeah, and then all of a sudden, Markov the Magnificent, who was just a magician, and now... we'll get to it, but now he is a magician who has a monkey that no one cares speaks English. I still can't get over that. But now that's the number one draw, so he's just, like, descending into complete alcoholism and jealousy and, like...
Wife beating.
He keeps threatening to quit, and he's beating his... I don't know if he's his wife, but his assistant, mm-hmm. who is in love with him. And she'll do anything he wants, by the way.
And he sucks.
Oh, he sucks, yeah. I mean, like...
Even the cats know he horrible. Sucks.
He's horrible. I know, they should have killed him.
Yeah. Because he does a show, we finally see him do his cat show, and then it, like, cuts away to something else, and when it cuts back, quote-unquote, he stumbles, and it's somebody with a completely different build and different hair, and they get, like, swiped at by the cat. And I just thought it was, oh, maybe his assistant or somebody got injured during the show, and that was going to be the next, like, plot thing, or something that came along and didn't matter at all, because that kind of happens a lot in this movie. But then it cuts back to him, and they're like, straight up David, the PR guy, comes in, he's like, Markov, you have to help Kirk. Dude, he's like, you need to help him, man. It's the most, like, deadpan nothing delivery. And Markov goes over and he's like, back up, Raja, or whatever the cat's name is. They all have, you know, Indian kind of sounding names. And he's like, back up, you know, and he's like, mm-hmm. you do not fear me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's like stock footage of the cat, like, sitting there being like, whatever. And then he, like, drags Kirk out and it's Kirk. And I was like, oh, that was him that got attacked. I was like, okay, sure. And he's still a dick. He just got his, like, chest slashed open by a tiger, and he's just like, thanks for saving me, I guess. You're the reason that I'm so fucking miserable. It's like, I just saved your life. And he's like, whatever, dude, your monkey's gay, or whatever. Like, it's, like, so fucking stupid.
Yeah, everyone is kind of monotonous in the movie, in a way.
Markov's okay. Not him. I stand by. Don Stewart is pretty good. I think the girl's really good. Ellen / Bud, played by Jennifer.
No, but
Holton.
Like Tony, I guess the owner.
Oh, Stoney.
Stoney.
Yes. Yeah. Stoney, I think he's mostly monotonous, but like I said, he's got those two scenes where he's got to cry, and the other he's got to be amazed that a monkey is doing anything at all.
Yeah, a guy named Stoney, he's got such a gooey center.
Yeah. I was certain Stoney was a last name.
Yeah, but it's no, not. It's Stoney Martin.
Stoney Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, it's Stoney's Carnival. And I was like, oh, this is going to be... And we find out that Bud / Ellen is his daughter. I was like, oh, she's Ellen Stoney. No, I guess she's Ellen Martin. Okay. This is kind of the plot of the film. Like I said, failing carnival, and Kirk can't get along with Markov the Magnificent. For kind of no reason, they keep butting heads because Markov talks to the cats, and that pisses Kirk off because, like, the cats, I guess, respond to Markov. Again, Eastern mysticism. He's a white guy raised by Buddhist monks or whatever, but he just can commune with nature. And we see him, like, meditating. We see him praying. Like, he's very spiritual. And I guess the cats respond to that, and it pisses Kirk off. So it's a, you know, it's him or me situation. And Markov is gonna leave until Bud talks him into staying because she sees that he's got a monkey. And the monkey can do, quote-unquote, anything you ask him to do. And speaks English, but we don't care about that. Markov and the monkey is Alexander the Great are the biggest draw. And people keep saying, like, you could go to the big time, which I guess is, like, Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey, type.
They kept comparing themselves to Barnum and Bailey.
Yeah,
we're going to be bigger than Barnum.
Yeah, and Kate, which is Markov's assistant, she... Oh, yeah, I used to be a showgirl for Barnum.
Right.
Like, they keep name-dropping, like, it's like...
It's Regina Carroll.
Regina Carroll, yes. And did you want to credit Alexander the Great?
Trudy the Chimp.
Trudy the Chimp. As we mentioned, there's a guy taking notes. Turns out he's a scientist who wants to study Alex because he believes Alex is the... missing link, or has, you know, it's very vague, but will somehow be the bridge in research between humans and apes, right? Humans and monkeys. Our simian ancestors. He comes around. David, who does the PR for the failing carnival, he's like, oh, it'd be great, you know, PR, great headlines if you, you know, let them study the ape. And Markov's like, well, you're not going to take
Alex away. You know, you can study him while we're at the carnival here. You can study him here. And the scientist who has been dubbed, I should mention...
Dr. Poole.
Yes.
He was portrayed physically by Charles Reynolds, but was voiced by David Pendleton.
Yeah.
Big ADR.
Also, David, the character, was played by Howard Siegel, and I forgot to credit, Linda Sherwood was the voice of Alex.
Yes, that's true. And Dr. Poole, the voice of Dr. Poole, mm-hmm. Pendleton, sounds like my Morgan Freeman impression.
Good night.
100%. Yeah, he just keeps being like, well, I just wanted to take some notes, and I wanted to study him, and thank you for seeing me. Good night. The end of the film, he says good night, I think it's like three times in succession.
I know we're not there yet, but the best like line from him is when he's talking to that younger doctor, and he kind of insults his like novice position. I don't know. What does he say?
He says, like, your expertise, valuable though it may be, will not be needed. Good night. Like, just like... I wish I could tell you that monkey Andy Dufresne didn't kidnap that woman. I wish I could tell you that. But yeah, they dub him with this weird guy. It's kind of great. So the crux of the third act is that Kirk gets his assistant. What's her name?
Kim.
Oh, that's Kim. Okay.
Yep.
Who played Kim? I don't have Kim.
I think it's Diane Kettering.
Kettering? Okay. He gets his assistant Kim to kidnap Alex. They sell Alex to the doctor. And then I guess they sell the cats and they're just going to live off the land or whatever.
Well, like Kim says something about wanting to go to Vegas. And that's when you get like Kirk being like, well, we can't leave town just yet because the heat's still really on. We, you know, Alex is such a big star. We basically kidnapped the Lindbergh baby.
Yeah.
And she's like, who's the Lindbergh baby? God. And he goes, dumb broad.
Yeah, and then like, hitting her. And then 8 minutes later, he's like beating the shit out of her because she's like, are they going to hurt Alex? And he's like, yeah, they definitely are because I'm a jealous fucking idiot. It's insane. It's such an insane movie.
I know.
He's going to be Markov the chump without a chimp.
Yes, that's a line.
Right.
And that's the line. When he says that, that's the line where she's like, wait, are they going to hurt Alex? It's like, that's the line that you're like, wait a second. Whatever, Kim. Then literally everyone from the carnival mount up. It's like a fucking posse. When they find out where Alex is, they go back to the carnival. I have no idea how far any of this is. Stoney gets out and he just like, he holler. It's like when you call pigs, like a pig calling competition. He gets out and he's like, hey, I'm gonna go get Alex. Hey, I'm gonna go get Alex. Hey, I'm gonna go get Alex. And everybody comes running like they've been waiting their whole lives. Like, this is like a drill they've done.
That was the real
Like, nobody right. comes around the corner and is like, what did you say? We're going to what? And they're like, no, that's the signal. And everybody runs. They pile in like four trucks and they head downtown to like raid a scientific institute.
That was the real carnival magic.
Was the carnival magic.
Yeah, I wish they had like strongmen to help them out or something though. Should have had some carnival people.
The third act should have been them using their carnival powers. Like,
yeah.
They had a single little person that tripped a guy, and it's that's
true.
About it.
Yeah, there's some good B-roll of that guy.
There are clowns in the B-roll, the like outtakes and stuff.
Oh,
there are
no
clowns in this finale. But like, yeah, you know, have a clown show up, Seltzer the security guard in the face, you know.
Yeah, acrobats. I thought maybe we're gonna do something with that.
Yeah,
you know,
anything. Or again, Markov can hypnotize men to do anything.
He's like Dr. Mabuse. You know that?
Mabuse, yeah, the gambler.
The shot of his eyes when they got close to his eyes, where you know he's hypnotizing people. It reminded me of Testament of Dr. Mabuse.
Yeah, I just don't understand why that thing that was set up where he made a man. Like, why isn't it set up where? Oh no. Alex is just on the other side of this fence with these iron bars. It's too bad we can't get through iron. And then Markov goes, can't we? And grabs like anybody from, you know, fucking carny who runs a ride and is like, you're no longer Eric who runs the Tilt-A-Whirl. You're Strongman Leo. And he goes, yeah, that's me. And he goes, bend these bars, Strongman Leo. And he bends it and they just walk through. Like, why is that not in the third act?
Well, did they just want to do the thing where, you know, Alex is kidnapped? And Markov knows it just by the thought transference thing.
He doesn't totally know.
I know, that's what I thought they would do, though.
Yeah, he wakes up and he goes, I had a feeling
that
Alex was afraid and in pain.
Because I remember one specific edit in sound where Alex is in the hospital bed, and you can hear like Alex's voice kind of like warbling in Markov's mind.
It goes Alex goes like
yeah.
Was and it that goes what, like wham wham wham
was
wham.
That that's what it was trying to do, right? Like
I have fucking no idea. It's never done before or after. It's not clear what's happening. We don't know the extent of Markov's powers.
Also, I feel like it didn't really make sense for Markov to continue, like, performing with Alex while the scientist was snooping around, because he was kind of a fishy guy. Like, would he really do the whole thought transference act while he's there on the grounds? Like, if you were Markov, what would you do? Would you kind of hide Alex away?
No, you can't. He's the draw. Everybody's there to see Alex. You can't not do the
act. There'd be riots.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
You're like, oh, the monkey's sick, and they'd be like, fuck you!
They do the whole part of their whole act. Markov is blindfolded, and Alex goes out into the crowd, you know, takes random items that people are holding, and Markov knows what they are. He's like, oh, give that young lady back her whatever comic. Mighty Mouse comic. You've already read that one. And the audience goes, oh, wow. And then he goes, like, would somebody hold out a bill? A $1 bill would be sufficient, you know? And then he's like, and he reads, like, the last four digits off it or whatever, and the guy goes, that's right! And everybody's like, wow! Like, but they do that in non-magic acts by having plants in the audience and people listen to conversations or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they do that stuff all the time. So I was like, oh, okay, this is, like, nothing. Like, this isn't that important. Plus, there's no, you know, through the language of cinema, there's nothing that tells me that this is magic that's happening. You know, there's no special sound effects.
Except
no...
for the close-up of his eyes, I guess.
That's when he does the radio.
Yeah.
Which I was like...
Well,
oh, yeah, that was weird.
Is that the only time?
In that sequence, yeah. Okay. The rest of it, it's just kind of like a half shot, like waist up of him with the blindfold on going, ugh.
Right.
Then they get it again when he convinces the guy to bend the bars. They do the close-up on his eyes.
Mm.
But so, like, with that, it's like, okay, so that was magic, and the radio was magic. He asks if anybody has a radio. A guy does. He's like, turn it off, please, and hold it high. And then he just kind of gestures at it, like, Dr. Orpheus from Venture Brothers, and then it turns on, and everybody's like, ooh! And it's like, okay, sure, yeah, whatever. But, like, again, none of this comes into play. He has actual magic powers, none of it comes into play at the end. It's very confusing.
Well, I did notice something weird. I don't know if it was on purpose. I think I'm reading into it too much, though. But do you remember the whole backstory where Markov was talking about how his wife died in a car accident?
Yes.
Right after that...
Did he say car accident?
He said accident.
Oh. Well, right after he talks about that, we cut to Alex driving recklessly. So I'm like, did he kill the wife?
Well, see, that would make sense because when we're introduced to Alex, the soundtrack, the score, is so wildly inappropriate. It's like the music that would play in a scene where two people are walking on a beach because one is telling the other that I have cancer and I'm going to die in 6 months.
Yeah, I kept thinking old age home commercial music.
Yeah, something. It's like it's very
plaintive
like
plaintive piano
and very like tender and very emotionally like wrought. Mm-hmm. And the scene is this is after Markov has been like, well, you know, it's Kirk or me. You know, when do you want me to leave? And Stoney's like, I can give you the end of the week. You know, so then he goes on a nature walk with Alex. We don't know who it is yet. Alex is off screen, but it's like Markov walking through and his hand is like down off the bottom of the screen because he's holding a chimp's hand. And he's like, we're going to have to move on to find some new work, you know, to do because if I can't feed you, we can't stay together. But you make so much noise, people think I have a monster hidden in my trailer. And you're just like, okay, what is this? I mean, I know it's a monkey because I've seen the trailer and it's the box art has a monkey. Like, I get it. But, like, what are we doing here?
Maybe it's a kid. Maybe it is a monster.
Right. Like, because theoretically, you don't know. And then he goes back to, one of the tents and Bud is asleep, like, you know, on a bench inside. And he wakes her up. He's like, oh, little lady, I fell asleep. And she's like, oh, sorry, whatever. Who's this? And then we cut and it's a monkey. And the music is like, plaintive piano, emotionally raw. And he's like, this is Alex. And it's like, no, no, no. Wow, what does he do? Anything he's asked. And I was like, oh, okay, wait. And the wife is dead because he dropped a line about like, ever since I've been training you, since Sarah died, you're the only thing that's gotten me through. And I was like, oh, wait. I was like, is the monkey Sarah's like soul in a monkey body? Or, you know, whatever. And then when he's like, he does whatever he's asked. I was like, oh, that seems like important. Did he somehow give Alex a command that Alex misinterpreted and took it too literally? And he like killed Sarah with a bat or something. Right. Like,
yeah.
You know? Or, and it's like, it's kind of Alex's fault. And he's like, it was a tragic accident. I'm like, oh, maybe we'll get more of this.
Yeah, I thought it was, that's what I thought.
And then, yeah,
he
you're right.
He just wanted him to beat her at Scrabble.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, we're playing Scrabble. Alex, beat her. Anyway, I'm going to go get some cocoa. I'll be right back. Goes in, puts some marshmallows in, stirs it up, comes back. Oh my God! And that's it.
It's like, nope.
It's like, nope, yeah. There's one clown shoe balanced on the toe floating in the middle of the room. And then the doctor shows up and he's like, what do you call a bad miracle? I wish I could tell you what you call a bad miracle. I wish I could tell you that.
Oh, boy.
That's what the doctor sounds like.
Yeah.
Good night.
Yeah, and he just keeps, again, his final couple of lines are like, you'll do the procedure as I have dictated. Good night. And he walks out of the hallway, and the young doctor's like, I think this is wrong. And he's like, well, your services will no longer be needed, I guess, even though you are quite talented. Good night. He just keeps saying good night. And I wanted every time, because he's not in it that much longer. It's almost, you know, movie's almost over at that point. But I wanted, like, when all the circus people bust in, you see him reacting. I wanted him to be like, good night. Like,
maybe somebody before they hit him in the face is just like, good night.
Because at the end, it's Stoney. He's like, you crooked son of a bitch. And he like punched him in the face.
Yeah.
And I wanted him to be like, bam. And then be like, good night. Even though he has no idea that that's what he says, it would be funny for us,
yeah,
the audience.
Right.
So, yeah, let's talk about all the backstory. So, like we said, Markov, raised by Buddhists in India. His parents were missionaries, killed by the Japanese. That's all very crazy.
Yeah.
And then, yes, his wife, Sarah, died in an accident shortly after announcing that they were going to have a child. But we don't know what accident. We never get more of that.
During the car chase, we get a backstory. One line about the sheriff. He's like, I just seen a ghost car. And the other cop is like, have you been drinking again?
Oh, yeah.
And that tells you a lot about the sheriff, I guess, right?
Dude, those two are my favorite. So a thing that Al Adamson, I guess, did a lot was hire locals. Just like local actors, local people.
Like non-actors.
Either local actors or non-actors. Just like I'm guessing the sheriff. I know, in fact, for sure that the sheriff and the deputy are not actors because one of them is credited as Sergeant Willis. Which is not an actor's name.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm guessing they just were like, hey, we want the cops to be in this scene. We'll get some real cops to do it. But, like, I think the daughter, Jennifer Holton, I think she was a local actress. And she's quite good, I think. She's, you know, like, she's not, like, the most dynamic or whatever. But she's good at conveying her couple of, like, emotional scenes. Nothing crazy. This movie doesn't ask a lot of people. You know, it's not like there are these melodramatic monologues and things. There's a lot of melodramatic information, but it's all very brief. So it's not like, oh, you have to get there, quote unquote, emotionally. Like David says, like, you know, I used to be from around here, but my father moved us up to New England.
Yeah.
And he runs whatever kind of company and he's trying to control my life.
His father runs like an ad, like agency kind of thing.
Oh, which is why, yeah, he does the PR.
Which is why he does ad work, but it's on a much like smaller.
Well, he's his own man.
Right.
Because he doesn't want his dad to control his life. But that's it. It's like three sentences or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not like he's got to have a tearful, you know, monologue about like, I just wanted to prove myself. Like it's not, you know.
Yeah,
so,
Kate Markov's assistant,
yeah,
was Miss Virginia.
Yeah.
And she got involved with a guy who did a robbery? Is that? I didn't write down what he did.
It was some kind of crime.
Okay. She was involved with a guy who did a crime, and the cops falsely accused her as his accomplice and stuff. And then she was like kind of blackballed everywhere, couldn't get a job, and then ended up at the carnival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she was a showgirl for,
yes,
Barnum.
Yes, yes, yes.
When that happened, and then Stoney found her and gave her a second chance.
Yeah, her and Markov are kind of having chemistry, yeah, but he is still not over his deceased wife.
No, and that's, yeah, called into high contrast because Stoney calls his daughter Bud because his former wife and Bud's mother left him because
she wasn't carny.
Wasn't carny enough. Couldn't hack it.
Couldn't hang.
He's never learned to trust women again, so that's why he calls her Bud, because she's his buddy, not his daughter, because a daughter would imply that she is a woman, and he can't trust women. But he can trust his buddy, Bud. Bud starts dating David, and starts wearing a dress and having her hair down. Before this, her hair is under Bart Simpson's lucky red hat. It's 100%, it's like the exact same like kind of square cap,
mm-hmm,
and it's way too big for her, it's because she has a lot of hair.
Yeah.
So they can do the quote-unquote reveal that she has, like, a girl's head of hair. It's my favorite. It's her and David, and they're on... There's a lot of nature walks in this movie because nature is cheap. It's not even a dig. Nature is production value. again, if you're there, it's a nice day, you have nice lighting, it looks great, your film automatically looks 10% better. So they're like sitting out by a river or some shit.
Production design by God.
That's right.
Which, it's kind of interesting. We don't really know where we are. I feel like the carnival is kind of isolated. We don't really get a sense of the surrounding area at all.
No, we deduced that it's North Carolina because that's what's on the cop's like patch on his shoulder.
But even when they're driving, it's all nature. I mean,
and we have no idea where anything. Like, again, I have no idea how far the city is where the hotel is, where Kirk
hospital.
Stays, let alone how far that is from the scientific institute.
Like, how'd they get there, right?
Right. Like, they just drove, and then for it to be so easy to be like, well, now that we know where the monkey is, we'll drive back to the carnival to get everybody and then back to the institute. Are you doubling back, or is it on the other side and you're going past that way anyway? Like, it doesn't track.
I guess we do see a part of the city when they crash into the fruit stand, right?
Well, that not even
a little town, I guess. It's
like a road stop.
Definitely a road stop.
Yeah, road stop, right.
The hospital at the very end is an even different location than the fact that
we go from the like scientific institute to an actual hospital,
I guess,
to try to save the monkey's life is fucking insane. A, they look totally the same because they probably are the same. It's probably shot the same place. But it's just so unnecessary. Nothing comes of it except for, as you mentioned, what's the one, the younger scientist? Livingston. So Livingston looks like, I don't know if you guys are familiar, A.D. Miles. He's a comedian. He's in like Role Models and the movie The Ten. This guy kind of looks like him. And then when they go to the hospital, the doctor who's going to help him save Alex's life looks like Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
And the nurse looks like L. Driver from fucking Kill Bill.
Yeah.
Like, it's the weirdest three people.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're going to save this monkey. And, like, the nurse has, like, two lines. The doctor, I don't think, has any. Like, it's such a weird, superfluous third act thing. And it's literally for 8 seconds at the end of the movie. You know what? Even more than Albert Einstein, he looks like Dr. Wiley. it's very strange. Again, like, it's one quick thing so that the monkey can die and then come back like E.T. Now, related to that, in that like special features thing of like this two some historians giving context,
the commentary,
no, it's like a little half an hour maybe bonus feature thing.
Oh,
they show a scan of like an old newspaper advert for this that compares it to E.T.
Huh.
The ending really felt like E.T.
It does, because the monkey is dead, and then Markov straight up says like, my powers, I can't stop death, it's the one thing I can't do. And it's like, okay, I'm glad we have any idea about your power. I'm glad we're being open that you have powers, a thing that's never been discussed. Like, why isn't that the movie? Like, I have a monkey that does anything, we have a psychic link, it speaks English, and I have actual magic superpowers.
Well, I mean, the other thing is he's got a line that says, I'm not special, I just refuse to be less than I can be. It's a very John Wick, like, Batman, like, mind over matter, I will mold myself into.
Scientology.
You know, I guess, yeah.
The only limits to what you can do are you. Now, hold these metal things. I'm going to take your wallet.
Are we supposed to believe that Markov mistreats Alex? Or is he just naturally smart, do you think?
No, Markov is a magician. Like, he's an actual magician. He is a man who does magic. He is, as Hart would say, a magic man. He communes with animals. He talks to the tigers in the beginning.
Yeah.
But... And they're all like...
And that dog, Baron?
Oh, that's right. The dog. Yeah, Baron. It is Baron.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot that it's Kirk's dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we only see him the once, and then
never comes up.
Because
there
is animal cruelty at that carnival.
Yeah, totally.
It's a carnival. It's a carnival in 1983. There's definitely animal cruelty.
Yeah.
It's all like... That's why we don't really have live animals in circus acts anymore, because like cracking a whip is bad. They don't like it. Jabbing them with sticks or cattle prods or whatever is bad, and they don't like it, and you shouldn't do it.
I mean, the film crew probably mistreated Trudy the chimp, right?
Well, probably,
maybe. I mean, like, unfortunately, that's
in
the
trivia.
Yeah.
Trudy was too old to be safely doing the role and would have tantrums where she would like throw things at people.
Oh my god.
Typical
and
diva.
She apparently injured the script supervisor.
Oh wow.
When they were trying to film a scene.
Scripty never does anything wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I always feel bad when I watch the movies with monkeys and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, but because you know what's actually going on.
Hunter did a whole article.
Yeah, I wrote an article
about
years ago.
Animal
it was like my
actors.
Second piece. All just about, yes. the history of animal cruelty in films and the tacit way in which it continues. Because, like, you see, because now everything is monitored by the MPAA and the ASPCA and all those organizations. They're like, yeah, they didn't do anything wrong. And I'm like, you fought, you did explosions out of the ground near horses. You can't let a horse know that's going to happen. There's no safe, normal way to be like, oh, Mr. Ed, just so you know, over there by that log, there's going to be like a big squib in the ground. It's going to blow up. Don't worry about it. You'll be totally safe. You'll be far away. The horse doesn't fucking understand that. So any even safe distance explosions are freaking that horse the fuck out. That's literally like me like walking in and firing a gun, not at you, just near you. And being like, what? There's not even a chance you were going to get shot. You'd be like, holy shit, my heart's pounding. I'm freaking the fuck out. I thought my life was going to end. It's like, yeah, that's how the horse feels all the time. So, like, I reviewed 12 Strong, Diary of a Horse Boy, or whatever the fuck that movie was called. It came out in, like, 2017. It's, like, based on a true story. Thor is in it, and Michael Shannon, and some other people. And it's based on an actual military unit who were in...
Iraq?
I forget where, but basically they found out that the way the locals got around were using horses, and they were like, oh, we should become a horse unit, and that'll let us get around more covertly. You know, we won't have to travel in vehicles and won't be as noticeable, and blah, blah, blah. So they do that. And in that, they use a bunch of fake horses in all the battle scenes.
Oh, really?
And, like, yeah, they're really riding horses some of the shots, but then, like, in the battle scenes, it's, like, obviously a fake horse on, like, a track.
Yeah.
It's not really moving, and then it, like, throws Thor off, and he lands in the sand or whatever, and it's like, I was like, oh, you can tell that's, like, an animatronic horse, because it doesn't look great, but also, that's awesome. I don't care, because you know what that means? That means we didn't have to have a horse fall over, because, like, A, that's dangerous for the rider, but it's dangerous for the horse, too. If the horse gets injured doing a fake fall, it's not like the injury is less career or life-ending.
Yeah.
They do that shit where they're like, oh, we shoot near the horse and the horse falls down dead. And it's like, yeah, but sometimes they like...
Multiple takes, too.
Right. And sometimes they break an ankle doing that.
Multiple.
And, yeah. And then they're like, ah, well, that's it for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that sucks. Like, fucking Jeremy Renner broke both his fucking arms trying to, like, do a snowplow on his property. We didn't fucking shoot him or put him on a farm. We let him come back and still be Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing that with a horse. Jeremy Renner, the horse, is glue now.
Did they have to CG his arms for Tag or something?
Yes.
Or something dumb like that?
Really?
There's footage behind the scenes of, I think it's Tag, where he's got two green screen casts.
Oh my God.
So he's got CG arms.
Holy How bad shit. Does it look?
I've never seen Tag, but the photos look perfect. Yeah, you couldn't pay me to watch Tag. Even for this show, I would... Like, if you were like, oh, I really want to do Tag next time, I'd be like... Not any other movie. Like, there's so many. You know, there's like a lot of movies, right? Like, so many.
My third one can be Tag.
It's like,
oh my God.
So many we haven't done. Yeah, and I think he was filming whatever the second Avengers, Ultron? Age of Ultron, I think.
Maybe, yeah.
And I think there's some shots in that where he's got the green screen cast on and stuff too. Or maybe it was reshoots or something, but he was doing, I think, both at the same time.
Oh boy.
But yeah, he broke both his arms doing. Something, I think it was operating a snowplow on his property. Wow. Like, it's just like a freak accident.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm glad he's okay. I like Jeremy Renner just fine, but like, we also, don't give Jeremy Renner the horse any fucking breaks. Like,
also, like, he's the archer guy in the Avengers. Like, it couldn't have been anybody else.
Right,
he needs his arm.
He's the most arms one.
I know.
He's all arms.
Like, it's, if Robert Downey Jr.
and then a little bit,
Cap.
Yeah, Cap, and then a little bit Iron Man because he's got to do the boosters. No.
False.
Okay.
Well, he does, but that's all CG. It's just an Iron Man cartoon.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right.
Robert Downey Jr. could be like reclining on a daybed the whole time. He's mostly CG.
They just have his face for the being in a suit.
That's the thing I don't understand. Not to get off on too serious a tangent, but like, that's what I don't understand about all these fucking actors getting like 8-packs to play whatever superhero. Not anytime, because they'll probably. Find excuse to be like, oh, look, pick an actor. Oh, look, Dev Patel's got his shirt off. Dev Patel's playing Daredevil in this movie. He's got his shirt off for some reason. Just so we can look at his abs. Great. And everybody can be like, ooh, look at his abs. I understand. That's totally fine, right? And I have nothing against abs or Dev Patel. But the fact that they're making actors get into this crazy shape to play a superhero when it's like the guy playing Fantastic Four's Human Torch. It's been a big story. He's starting his diet regime. I guess he posted it on his social media.
Oh, for the new movie.
Yeah. I guess he's posted on his social media where he's like, day one at the gym getting my torch body or whatever. And it's like, you're going to be CG. You're a guy who's on fire. They're not using you for that. They're replacing literally all of your fucking body.
There's going to be a scene with his shirt off, though.
Yeah, there's going to be that one scene where he's on a date. On. Right. And they can't find the cheese grater, so they're going to have to use his abs.
Grate his abs. Right. Or he's going to interrupt Reed and Sue's date by being like, why don't you guys eat sushi off my abs? And then they're going to be like, Johnny, you hothead. And they're going to shake a stick at him or whatever. He's mostly going to be CG in that film. Right. He's going to be on fire the whole time. They're not using any actual footage of him, so he could be built like me, and they could still give him all the abs. Like, it doesn't fucking matter.
Yep.
It's insane that they're making these guys get in a crazy shape no one should have to be in, so that they can be a cartoon.
Yeah, and then worst case, something like what happened to Kumail Nanjiani happens, where he has to just be like that.
Do you know this?
What?
Kumail got, he was playing one of the Eternals, so he got in shape, and then COVID happened, and they shut down for like a year. So he had to stay on that diet and exercise regimen for a whole year to keep that body. But then I watched the fucking movie, right?
Oh, boy.
And he's...
in a suit.
He's in a suit the whole time. He's in a costume. And the times he uses his powers, like, he's never shirtless, I don't think, ever in that movie. And it's like...
that's kind of
It's
horrible.
Like, you could just fucking CG him. It's insane.
They CG everything else.
Right. It's mostly... they're mostly not in these movies. And it's crazy to me that Christopher Reeve, right?
Yeah.
Still the greatest Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Not an ab in sight. Dad bod Superman.
Michael Keaton.
No. Michael Keaton! Oh, those abs? Rubber. Sculpted. Could barely move his neck.
There's that one scene where he's hanging upside down on that pole.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have abs. No. You don't need him.
He's just a fit
guy. Batman.
He's just an okay fit guy. He's a guy that looks like he jogs. He's not a guy that looks like he jogs while carrying two other guys. Like, that's fucking crazy.
Like, the abs are built into the costume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were like, no one should do this. No one should have to do this.
Yeah.
Like, did George Clooney do this for Batman?
George
Clooney. Like, he worked out his ass, right?
Yeah.
And his
he did butt lifts.
And he couldn't move his neck.
He could move his neck.
Oh,
Keaton couldn't.
Okay.
Yeah, that first Batman suit, all he does is turn his entire upper body because the neck didn't move.
I remember Val Kilmer had an issue with the costume.
Oh, did they? I thought they fixed it by then, but maybe not. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Because, I think one of them, it might have been Val Kilmer, who said he could not hear a word people were saying in that costume.
That also happened to Michelle Pfeiffer, where she was, like, functionally deaf in the Catwoman suit.
Really?
Yeah, because it was so tight around literally everything, including her head.
I mean...
yeah.
And it's vinyl. It's not like it's not like it breathes.
No.
But yeah, I just don't understand this, like, gotta get in crazy shape. It's like, fuck you.
You know who's
just,
the only one?
Just do a face replace. Just get a model or a professional kickboxer or somebody and put, you know, again, I'll use Dev Patel. Put Dev Patel's face on his body for 2 seconds. So then Dev Patel's allowed to eat carbs now. It's fine.
Lou Ferrigno in the Hulk show. That's different.
Right. Well, if you're playing physical Hulk... where you have to be beefed up, then yeah, you get like Brian Cage, professional wrestler Brian Cage. That guy's got every muscle you can possibly have.
And a couple that don't exist on other people.
No, he collects muscles and he's got all of them, even the rare ones.
Yeah.
He's got holographic Charizard muscles.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, that guy's got all the muscles. So you need somebody to physically portray the Hulk. Get a big guy like that. But don't be like, oh, Timothy Chalamet, you have to get 19 abs and then we're going to
see... Bob Dylan.
We're going to CG... yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This Bob is yoked.
You think a lot of the actors choose to do that, though?
Okay, so I think it's multiple things. I know it's good for their social media, and then therefore their level of fame and how
promotion
much money they're
the
worth
movie.
And everything. Yeah, and it's good for the studio to think they're worth more, whatever. And I also know that studios usually will either pay or recoup you for getting, like, a life coach and dietitian and all this. So, like, you're going to get in the best shape of your entire life, and somebody else is going to pay for it. You don't have to pay for it all out of pocket. So I get it. Like, if Marvel called me today and was like, hey, you're going to play, like, fucking, I don't know, Stilt Man. And I'm like, cool. I'm going to need, like, a dietitian and, you know, get me in shape. They're like, absolutely, we're going to put you in touch with whoever. We're going to pay for it. Then, yes, Hunter's going to have all the abs to play Stilt Man. Why? Is Stilt Man ever going to be topless in this movie? No, absolutely not. But I will be in the best shape of my life. Okay. Because somebody else is paying me to get in the great shape. And that's cool. And I, you know, that's fine if that's what somebody wants to do. But the idea that, like, I'm playing Mr. Fantastic. Mr. Fantastic doesn't need abs.
No.
He's a rubber guy. He's a nerd.
And yeah, that too.
That's the thing. He's a scientist.
Yeah.
He's not the jackedest scientist in the world. He's not the scientist that invented, like, jacked up serum.
No, he's not a Planet Fitness.
No, he's just like, he's just a nerd who learned how to, you know, he got bombarded with cosmic rays, learns how to stretch. It's just crazy that they're like, oh, every superhero has to be absolutely fucking shredded.
I don't like that it is sort of becoming compulsory for people to do this, to be, you know, considered for these roles or taken seriously or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because there are some actors that absolutely do, like, that's part of their process, you know.
Christian Bale,
Ewan McGregor, Joaquin Phoenix. Like, a lot of people will go through these intense physical changes as part of their process. And if that works for you as an artist, then that is your choice. But to have it where that's not what somebody would rather do, but they get pressured into it, it's gross.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Men would rather become method actors than go to therapy.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many actors are like, I'm gonna gain some weight for this, and they're it's like, how did you gain the weight? And they're like, oh, I just microwaved Haagen-Dazs and drank it, and it's like, that'll do it. I don't know if that's great.
At least it's fun.
Yeah. Like when you get to see Brad Pitt's, like, I got to really cut loose or whatever. Ryan Gosling.
Gosling, yeah, him.
Ryan Gosling. He was originally cast in, I forget what role. I think it's the dad. I think it's the Stanley Tucci role in The Lovely Bones, and he was like, oh, I'm like a middle-aged dad, like an average guy. He's like, I should, like, I'll gain some weight and be kind of like average-looking dude and kind of schlubby. Mm-hmm. And he showed up on set, and Peter Jackson's like, what are you doing? And he was like, oh, I just thought, like, you know, I'd be like an average guy. He's like, no, like, we sold this on having you on the poster, like, handsome Ryan Gosling. And he was like, oh, well, you know, I just thought, like, I'd be an average guy. And he got fired and replaced because he was microwaving his Haagen-Dazs or Ben and Jerry's and drinking them, and he was like, yeah, I look like a normal dad. And everybody's like, you can't look like a fucking normal dad in this movie. Are you kidding? This movie about a normal dad?
Yeah, this was still a good like 10 years before rocking the dad bod was a thing, right? We were ready for, I guess.
And it was trendsetter.
It was cool that Colin Farrell got to be schlubby for the Lobster.
I don't remember what he looks like physically.
He's got a little bit of a spare tire happening.
Pudgy. Yeah.
He's not like wildly out of shape, but
He just looks like an average guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fine.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Whatever. Well, Lobster's not a superhero.
No, I know.
Marvel presents The Lobster. Then you have so many abs. And he's like, I'm just playing a sad guy, right? And they're like, yeah, but sad guys have abs too, I think. I don't know. I definitely don't have one. I'm the head of a studio. I don't have any abs.
All you gotta know is you have abs and your brother's a dog. That's it.
God, I love that movie.
It's great. It's a really good movie.
All right. Carnival Magic. I'm sorry. I knew as soon as I said I don't want to go off on too long that it was going to be...
No, but that was a good topic because of the animal cruelty stuff.
Animal cruelty, people cruelty. There's just a lot of that.
Yeah, but if they treat human beings that way, imagine how they treat animals.
Yeah, I know.
Well, there's no organization to put a little stamp at the end that says no humans were given like lifetime body dysmorphia or eating disorders as a result of this production. Yeah. So since that doesn't exist yet, then they can still do that.
Oh, yeah, that one moment that we were all laughing about with that kiss in the middle of the carnival.
Oh, boy.
Kirk and Kim.
Yeah.
This is when Kirk announces that he, you know, he's like, well, I'm going to steal the monkey and give it to Dr. Poole. And Kim's like, and then what are we going to do? He's like, we're going to do whatever we want, you know, something. And she's like, okay. And he's like, all right, I'll meet you back at the hotel or whatever. And she goes, and I'll do anything you want. And then it's like, when people have never kissed, they just like crush their faces together.
Have you ever seen the YouTube video of the banana slugs mating?
I actually have.
It's kind of like that.
It is kind of like
that. I'm going to watch it.
It is drier.
Yes.
But the energy is the same.
Sure.
My favorite part is when the monkey steals the car. Let's talk about this. Like you mentioned, there's like a dialogue scene and then we hard cut to a monkey climbing into a car. The monkey, Alex, climbing into a car. No explanation where this car is in, I guess, at the carnival, maybe? But there's a girl asleep in the back. So Alex is driving down, you know, the road, all over the road, both sides. Wrong side, right side. People are pulling off. First one is the sheriff, played by Mike Allen. And, yeah, he, like, swerves off and gets out and calls it in, you know, and the deputy picks up, deputy played by Sergeant Willis, as I mentioned. He's like, you know, all right, Sheriff, what's going on? He's like, I saw a ghost car. He's like, a ghost car? He's like, yeah, a car with no driver. And he's like, sure, have you been drinking again? He's like, oh, man, I got no driver.
And he's like, you know, where are you? And he gives him an intersection.
Sheriff's like, where are you? And he's like, oh, I'm at whatever and whatever. He's like, it's coming your way.
Yeah. It's not a ghost car. It's kind of a King Kong sheriff. And the sheriff's like, what do you mean? He's like, an ape kidnapped a beautiful girl.
Yeah. And then she wakes up and wants a hot dog.
Yeah. Well, that's what she's like, Tim,
I'm trying to sleep. And then she's like, did you get my hot dog? And I was just like, which fucking is it? Like, are you trying to sleep? Or did Tim go to get a hot dog? Like, how?
She's dreaming about hot dogs.
Yeah. But yeah, and then she realizes it's a monkey. And again, the monkey talks. No one reacts. Like, she has her whole upper body out of this car, waving at the deputy. And she's not like, the monkey talks. I don't know what's happening.
No one acknowledges that.
No. Welcome back to the show.
No way.
Missy Crutchfield.
Really?
The girl in the car.
What was she in?
Previous episode, 34 Blowout.
Really?
Oh, really?
She plays dancing co-ed.
Okay.
And that's
for
pretty
that,
much it. She's
like
in,
movie within a movie thing?
I don't know.
Nice.
But she's in four things, and that's we've done two of them now.
Well, I didn't think we'd have anything in this movie.
It's the only person,
that's
as far
really
as I know.
Funny.
So that's our one welcome back.
Sweet.
But it is my favorite part, because I do really like the sheriff and the deputy. They're just really funny. Like, it's just so stupid. The sheriff, I guess his car is fucked up from pulling off the road, so there's a shot of him getting it towed away with him sitting on the fucking, like, trunk as they're driving.
Yeah, just looking
dejected. Don't forget the
banjo.
Oh, well, it's a car chase in a movie that takes place vaguely in the South, so there's a banjo immediately, as soon as that monkey turns that key.
That's a monkey movie trope, probably, right?
I would imagine so. Any car chase that takes place south of, I would say, Pennsylvania. If there's a car chase happening, there's probably a banjo. If it is, especially East Coast, south of Pennsylvania, it's probably banjo music.
It's like, what's that, Deliverance? No.
Well, Deliverance has dueling banjos.
Yeah, Deliverance, right.
Yeah, but that's not so much about car chasing.
No,
yes,
no,
it
but
is about
that where,
some other things
that,
happening.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention, we didn't talk about it, when Markov is convincing Clarence to become Gus and Ben the Thing. When he starts that whole bit, he picks up a rod. Well, two of them, and he bangs them together to show that they're steel. And he hands his assistant one, and he takes the other, and he holds it, and he stares at it, and he says, I am man, possessed of will. You are steel with none. I will you to bend. I think that's, like, insane. It's so silly, because it's perfect for a carny magician.
Yeah.
There was the Snickers bar joke, too.
Yeah, he's like, oh, hand him a bar, and Alex hands over a candy bar. And he's like, not a candy bar. And then the first guy, who's like a big muscle-bound guy, kind of, he's like a big, large guy. Back in the 70s and early 80s, if you were just, like, large, they were like, that's a tough motherfucker. Do not fuck with him. Speaking of, like, superhero physiques and stuff.
Yeah.
So he couldn't bend it, and he goes, well, hand him a candy bar. And that's the gag. Everybody laughs. Mm-hmm. And then he has, like, comparatively a scrawny guy come up, and he bends the steel because of hypnotism and, like you said, multiple personalities.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Split.
Yep.
Where the Gus personality has super strength.
I was going to say earlier when you were talking about him maybe using that to let Alex escape is, you know, he has to hypnotize other carnies. It's like, oh, now you're a Leo. They should all just be Gus.
Yeah.
Just an army of Gus's.
You are Gus, and you are Gus, and you are Gus. And they're all just, like, fucking ripping cars in half, pulling bricks out of the wall so they can walk through. Be awesome. Much better movie.
It's a guy with untold strength.
It's acronym. Yeah. It's an acronym.
Yeah.
That's your pitch for, like, Clarence and G-U-S.
Yeah.
Clarence, who's Clarence Voyant.
Sure.
And Gus,
guy
with untold strength.
Yeah.
We could get this made.
Yeah, and they also have an Invisible Girl and Torch Guy. Why not?
Sure. Jeff Patel, please be in this film. I will not make you get any abs you don't want. Oh, I looked up. I noticed that one of the rides, it's the one I think of as being called Parachutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, kind of the octopus-y, like, set up in the center, all the different arms, and each one has, like, a little two or three person, like, round,
like the teacups.
It's not the teacups. They're suspended from the top. Oh. not on a rotating thing on the bottom.
Oh, don't they call it like the hot, like the balloon, whatever?
Sometimes it's balloon thing. Yes. So in this it was called Trabant, T-R-A-B-A-N-T.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked that up, and that is I think it's German for satellites.
Huh.
And it colloquially was used to mean like lifeguard or attendant. Somebody who was around, like satellite in that fashion.
Sure.
But it means literally like satellites.
Hmm.
So I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Just a weird thing. I was like, hey, I wonder why that's called that.
Like having a ride called Sputnik.
Sure.
Do you guys like the carnival? like going?
I mean, I haven't really been except for school carnivals, which are smaller. But, you know.
Because, like, I like going. I don't like going on rides, though. I just like looking at stuff and people watching, eating food.
Any rides that I've been on have been amusement parks, not carnivals. But I am a big fan of, like, roller coasters. And I used to be a bigger fan of, like, the sideshow rides, like Trabant or Balloon or whatever. But as I've gotten older, I am more inclined to get nauseous.
Me too.
I'll go through any haunted house. First of all, if your carnival has a haunted house ride, I will do that. I also like roller coasters. But last time, maybe this is coincidence, maybe not. The last time I went to a carnival, like traveling carnival set up in a field carnival.
Yeah.
We arrived there, some friends of mine and I, and we got out and we realized we recognized two of the people who were operating the rides. And they were two friends of ours that had, you know, developed pretty bad drug problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that was like a cliche of the carnival,
carnies.
The carny lifestyle. But I was like, oh, I sincerely don't trust these people to correctly and safely assemble anything. So I did not go on any rides that day. And I have never been back. I went on the haunted house because if it breaks down, I'm just walking out.
Yeah.
But like, nothing else.
Yeah, I can't do rides. The only ride I can really do is the Gravitron because you're stuck to a wall.
Yeah.
And you can't really feel how fast you're going.
Yeah.
It's either that and or the House of Mirrors, because I can bang into stuff. I can hit my head on everything, because I've already lost a couple brain cells. What's a couple more?
It's not good
but
for you.
But no, I know
it's fine.
I like the House of Mirrors though.
Yeah.
Fun houses.
Yeah, I've never actually been in one.
My family reunion every year used to be at Nobles Grove, Knobles, upstate PA, and their merry-go-round has the ring grab.
Oh, that's fun.
Where you reach out and try to
grab. Nobody does that anymore.
No, they still do. And it's awesome. And
if you grab the brass ring, you get a prize.
Yeah. And my when I was pretty young, I mean, like, I don't know. Young enough where I could not reach the rings, my dad started coaching me on how to. He's got to lean really far forward because then you can get two, sometimes three. But you really got to, like, it's like hook, hook, hook. Like, hook with your pointer finger, hook with your middle finger, hook with your ring finger. And you can probably get one, two, three as it goes past. It's like my dad's secret skill. He's got like 25 like rings of these rings on each finger.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and when I was a kid, he'd be like, "Here, hold these," and he'd just be handing me stacks of them that he was getting every time we went around. Everybody else is getting one, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's like fucking grifting this carnival ride.
You know.
I liked at one point. I think it's David comes up to Stony and he's like, "Hey," it's like a nothing scene where it's just like them passing the time, but he's like, "Hey Stony, how's it going?" He's like, "People are making money, people are losing money." I was like, it reminded me of Brian Cox in Adaptation. Have you ever seen Adaptation?
Oh my gosh, a while back. Yeah,
have you seen Adaptation?
No.
Nicolas Cage plays two versions of Charlie Kaufman trying to write the movie that he's in. It's Charlie Kaufman. It's a very Charlie Kaufman idea, but he goes to a like screenplay writing workshop hosted by a character played by Brian Cox, and he's like, you know, what if I was like, I wanted to maybe write a script where not much happens, and Brian Cox delivers this like impassioned speech about everything is something.
I've seen that scene. It's like a lecture hall.
Yeah, and he's you know, but he goes like, people find love, people lose it, and that's what this Stony reminded me of. It's like, people make money, people lose money. And I was like, I kind of want to watch Adaptation again. Is there any other stuff we wanted to talk about with regards to this film?
I mean, we also didn't mention that they're marketing the fuck out of Alex. They got, you know, little monkey
dolls,
stuffed animals everywhere.
I had
stuff.
A monkey very similar to that as a kid.
Huh.
It has like a plastic face and plastic shoes.
Hmm.
But the one I had corduroy overalls.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have, this one has like a t-shirt with Alex written on it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mine was called Zip or Mr. Zip or something.
Hmm.
Which I believe was written on his overalls.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I had like it was very similar to that design. I saw that and I was like, oh, I wonder if that's like the same thing? No idea. Yeah, they're planning on Alex being the draw for this carnival. David even says like, oh, you'll make more money in the down season than you will while we're touring, or however he phrases it. But
it's
while
a
it's
traveling active. Carnival, right?
I guess.
Sort of. It's kind of vague.
Yeah, it's unclear. All this is very unclear. So much of this movie is unclear.
I know.
Because, I mean, it doesn't actually matter. Oh, that's we didn't talk about this with regards to the backstory that... So Stony, because Ellen is his bud. He can't process her wearing a dress and having her hair down. So he's like, get that dress away, and you're bud, and I won't hear her anymore. And he, like, walks off. And then the next scene, we see him. He's just standing in the woods crying, and it, unrelated to the movie, it looks like he has a black eye.
Yeah, I did notice that, too.
But it looked like special effects makeup.
I wonder if that was a Trudy injury.
Oh, wow.
I don't know for sure.
It didn't look.
But, yeah, he just had, like, a little purple bruise under one eye. Yeah,
It was unclear. It didn't look fresh.
Yeah, it almost looked like if he had dark circles, except it was only under one eye,
which was definitely
a bruise.
And it could also be like a thing that got cut out.
Yeah, that's also true.
But he's like crying in the woods, and Markov shows up, and he's just like, you can't keep living in the past just because your wife died. Oh, wait, no, that's my problem. Sorry. Just because your wife left you doesn't mean you have to punish Ellen. She's a young woman now, and she needs you in her life. I should probably take my own advice and fucking talk to Kate, because she's clearly into me, but I'm still in love with my dead wife. I don't know how long ago she passed away. I've never said. It's all very unclear, but like everybody has this like huge baggage of like backstory that they kind of deal with. Like you mentioned, it's kind of that's the movie.
Yeah.
But also it's like indirectly.
Yeah.
Like it's not even like this is directly motivated by Alex.
Right.
It's more that like they just talk. But they haven't up until this point, no matter how long they've worked. Like, straight up, Ellen says to David, like, we've known each other a long time, but we don't know anything about each other. And then he's like, don't worry, we will. Let's kiss. And then they kiss.
Yeah, I mean, this might be meeting this more than halfway, but it might be that now that the financial troubles of the carnival are in a better spot, it gives everybody room to start kind of working on themselves.
That is a very charitable interpretation of
this
film.
Sure.
Stoney does go back and he's like, Ellen, I'm sorry. I never meant to punish you for being your mother's daughter. And she's like, well, that's good because now I'm engaged to David. And he's like, what? Engaged? And he hugs her and he shakes David's hand. And that's the end of that. There is no more character development for any of them. And that's in the second act.
Yeah.
It's fine, I guess. So let's talk about the climax. Kirk takes Alex. We don't see any of this. One day they're just like, hey, where's Alex? Haven't seen him. Weird. It's so weird that you don't know where your monkey is. Like, you guys actually live together. You live in the same trailer. But he's like, yeah, haven't seen Alex. Don't know. The fucking, you know, world's most valuable monkey.
Yeah, well, even when he's, like, off in the car, it's because Markov and Kate are, like, taking a nature walk and stuff. And Kate's like, oh, where is Alex? And Markov's like, he's taking a nap. And it turns out he had woken up from that nap and decided to go for a joyride.
Yeah,
and
so I don't think they have, like, soul transference or whatever. Because she'd be like, hey, where is Alex? And he's like, he stole a car, cut to.
He does his own thing.
Also, it just cuts back. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to see how this plays out. Because, you know, the cops show up and... And he drove the car through a fruit stand and he's like eating an ear of corn. And this girl's like, I'm about to pass out from terror. And it cuts back and Alex is just there and no one mentions it until, you know, Ellen comes in and she's like, oh, hey, Alex. And he's like, don't talk to him. He's grounded for 2 weeks for driving without a license.
He's on the beige. He's on probation for 6 months.
I'm sorry. The beige?
The beige.
Oh, is that dialogue from the film?
No.
Oh, is that just something you said?
Yes.
Interesting. I've never heard anyone say the beige. I really want people to start saying, you know, the beige. You made a point to throw that out there.
I feel like that's entrapment, because who's going to give a monkey a license?
Okay, the cops show up, they get the monkey, and they're like, well, I guess we should just check out that carnival up the road and see if it's theirs. And then they just drop him off and like, don't let it happen again. Somebody died! The guy driving that red car, as we mentioned, goes off the edge of the world and is never seen or heard from again. There's no... Everybody else that pulls off to the side of the road, we see the sergeant gets out and he's like, dang it, ghost car! And we see another, like, heavy dude get out and he throws his hat in the dirt. But this person we never see again. Do you know why? Because they are fucking dead. And the cop's like, don't let it happen again.
Maybe the red car was a ghost car.
Maybe. It definitely was.
It certainly
was
is now. Yeah.
It was always meant to be a ghost car, as Markov would say.
Mm-hmm.
Shirtless.
Doing monkey-assisted push-ups and
yeah.
Wrestling.
He's...
The wrestling came back. Markov and Alex are wrestling.
They're roughhousing, yeah.
And so then when he's like trying, when Alex is trying to escape from the Institute.
Oh, he does just wreck like, shit on like three orderlies.
Yep. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, we cut to, at one point, a scene starts with Markov doing push-ups, and Alex is, like, supposedly pressing on his back, and then he just starts, like, goosing him and grabbing his ass. Yeah. And then they just start wrestling. And, like, roughhousing. And I was like, having a monkey seems kind of fun. Especially if you live in a tent.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're buds. That's why I was like, maybe it's his wife's spirit. But again, that's not in this. So, it's unclear what they're doing. I did write down this one line of dialogue that the doctor has where he says, Dr. Poole, he's about to do whatever his operation is, and he says, vivisection is a dirty word, but it's... Oh, I should do it in my Morgan Freeman. Vivisection is a dirty word, but it is necessary if we are to solve problems that must be solved.
Must they?
How about your Clint?
Nobody in here sounds like
Nobody
Clint
sounds like Clint.
Maybe he was driving the red car.
Clint? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, look, Clyde, it's another monk. Oh, wait, what? Oh, no. Son of a bitch, Clyde's dead. Clyde, I told you to wear your seatbelt, dang it.
And he's listening to jazz.
Yeah, he's listening to jazz. Looks, Clyde's just swinging through the trees. He's like, finally, I'm free. I also sound like Morgan Freeman. Well, I guess I gotta go punch a bunch more bikers or whatever. Is that for both movies, is it bikers?
They come back in the sequel.
You gotta love a sequel that's just like, run it back, whole first movie again.
Yeah. Any which
Wayne's
way you
World.
Can.
But Wayne's World is, again, it's the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah.
Because they, do you know this about Wayne's World?
No.
Wayne's World 2 was a totally different movie, and they had blocked out, like, we're gonna shoot it from April to June, or whatever it is. Like, they everybody signed up, they had the cast ready, they had the script ready to shoot, because whoever had talked to Mike Myers and Dana Carvey and whoever wrote the script had assured them, like, oh, you know what we're going to have the rights to? Fantasy Island. You should do a Fantasy Island type, set Wayne's World on Fantasy Island. And, you know, they were like, oh, that's awesome. So they wrote this screenplay that was Wayne and Garth something something, a Fantasy Island type situation. And then at the last minute, it was like, oh, that deal fell through. We don't own that. You can't use this script. But we're still going to film the sequel because that first one made a lot of money and we already blocked it out and got everybody to sign up. So they're like, yeah, just write a whole new script. And they didn't have time, you know, like,
so what happened?
They just took the original script and did it again, basically.
Oh god.
Have you ever seen Wayne's World 2?
Never. No, I haven't seen Wayne's World.
Oh, you got to see Wayne's World. Wayne's World is like a 5-star film. I'm not kidding at all. It's like a great movie.
Right.
That's the one where you're like, yeah, it's the same movie, but like it wasn't cuz they were lazy, it's cuz they kind of got screwed. Okay, so Alex tries to bust out of there. We're not really sure what they're going to do, but vivisection is, you know, I guess on the docket. We do see Alex steals a thing of keys and undoes the lock that's, like, chaining him up. And the one scientist is like, that's impossible.
But it takes her forever to hear him do that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the nurse is like...
She's, like, reading in the same room.
Yeah.
Doesn't notice until the monkey's like, I did it. And she's like, yuck. Oh, shit.
I love when he says yuck.
Yuck. And then, like... And then it cuts back and there's three orderlies. And yeah, it's like just Alex fucking like wrecking shit. The one orderly is like, or maybe it's the little the younger doctor, but he's like curled up in the corner, like holding a chair in front of him the way a lion tamer does. Mm-hmm. Like there's this one orderly who's just like getting just bodied. And it's just ridiculous. It's obviously the same set as Kirk's hotel room. They just redressed it.
Yeah.
When they go in to get information from Kirk, they, like, break the door off its hinges, and I was like, I don't know if that was supposed to happen or not. It feels like it was just like, we'll just throw up the quick set, and then Markov was like, I'm fucking jacked, I'm fired up, and he, like, wrecked it and was just like, I'm going with it.
He doesn't need abs.
Yeah, I mean...
He doesn't.
Door looked really flimsy.
The whole set looked flimsy.
But yeah, I know. Also, arguably, nobody needs abs. Some people just want them.
Like, have you seen It's a Mad, 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 Mad World?
No, I don't think
I've seen the original bunch. I saw the, like, 2000s one once, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
2000s?
Yeah, it was, like, Mr. Bean and Breckenmeyer.
Wait,
and
that, what was it called?
It's a Mad, Mad,
really?
Mad, Mad, I think so. Oh, no, it's called Rat Race, but it's the same movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, there's a scene where Jonathan Winters wrecks a gas station. It's clearly a set, but he, like, throws walls in different places. It's
oh, really?
Great. So I feel like that was going to happen in this movie.
Yeah.
You gotta watch that. It's my favorite comedy.
It's a great movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you've seen it?
Oh, I've seen the original a bunch. I just don't remember that. Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. It's a gas station. He gets angry and, yeah, destroys it. But no, I felt like that was gonna happen in the room.
Either
it
just of the felt two flimsy. Sets, yeah. Then there's a confrontation, I guess, out in the hall. And when they go back in, they're like, Alex is not responding. And the nurse goes, poison! He drank poison. And I just started cackling the first time I watched this. I was like, this is so fucking melodramatic. Also, a get argument against them having a psychic connection. He would know Markov was out there, out like right outside or in the neighborhood. And he's like, he's coming to rescue me. I won't drink poison like it's fucking Romeo and Juliet. But instead he drinks poison. They have to take him to a different hospital where Dr. Wiley and L. Driver can work on him. And it fails and he dies. And then Markov comes in and he's like, well, I'm sorry, little buddy. I guess I'll have to learn to get over my dead wife because now I have you to mourn or whatever he says. And then the monkey's like, nah, I'm alive. And his heartbeat starts
but,
up
again. Yeah, but they didn't turn off the flat line.
No. This whole scene is just like, beep in the background.
I know.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, the doctors sonically. Leave the room, but just leave that going. And it's like, you wouldn't fucking do that.
No, they'd click that thing off.
Yeah. But yeah, so we can see he's alive.
Yeah. I also like one of the carnies who drags Dr. Poole into the office. He's wearing a Waylon and Willie shirt. Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson.
I didn't see that.
Yeah,
I
was like...
That's funny.
And he's holding Dr. Poole, and that's when Stoney, like, knocks him out. One punch, out to lunch.
You also like the costuming for the magic shows, where...
I do. Markov's wearing all black with this, like, white cape with this multicolored geometric design. It's pretty cool.
And then Alex also has a matching cape, and they both have medallions.
Yes, well, it is
gold medallions.
It's 1983, so they got them at a 1970s garage sale.
Yeah.
Did you notice the other motif of pop culture in the movie?
What?
Snoopy.
Oh, yeah.
Snoopy is in the opening shot under the title.
He's in the background a lot, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's, like, carnival stuffed animals that you can win of Snoopy.
Sure.
Yeah. Just little sawdust stuffed.
Yeah.
I love the music in the movie, actually. The, like, carnival-esque elevator music is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a wide variety of different genres, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like it's... A lot of it's the same theme done with different instruments.
Yeah.
With the exception of the banjo music.
And I usually don't like when they use music to, like, force emotion on you, but they didn't really do that. I don't know.
No, in fact, some of the music, like I mentioned, that introduction to Alex scene, the music is wildly discordant with the tone of the scene. The tone of the scene is like, this is Alex. He's my secret monkey. And he's real special. And the music is like, Alex and I were to be wed, but my father will not allow it. Like, it's that kind of, like, music.
It's usually, I guess it is, like, the opposite of what you're supposed to feel sometimes.
And at the end, when he's wrecking shit in the hotel room, in the doctor's operating room against these three orderlies, it's like... upbeat music. Like, it's like the 80s sitcom theme. It's like the theme that should be for BJ and the Bear. Like, it should be like, having fun and wrecking a room and beating these guys half to death.
Like, and then there was, like, John Carpenter horror music at points.
There is, like, a thing, I think it's when they're operating on Alex, where it's just like, bum, 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 bum. And then it does, like, the ding-a-ding, ding-a-ding, bum, bum, ding-a-ding, bum.
Scary.
Bum. Yeah, and it's just, like, quote-unquote tense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the music by its as pieces of music I think was good, but a couple times I was like, it's in the wrong spot, you're doing this weird. But yeah, Alex is alive. And then do we get any more, like, is there any idea of
no
what's
Alec
happen?
Lives and then there's a parade.
Yes, it just hard cuts to a parade, right?
Yeah
and it's a parade. We were talking about this while we were watching it. Had to be just a pre-existing parade that they were like, hey, can we be a part of this as part of our movie? And so they have, like, signage for, like, Markov the Magnificent and, you know, Alexander the Great and, you know, Stoney's Carnival. And people are, like, freaking out. People are coming up and, like, kissing Markov. They, like, can't wait to touch his hand, I guess, because he is, like, the only person to do miracles since Jesus.
Since Dr. Mabuse.
Dude, it's crazy.
I just have, an inkling that it was filmed before... the rest of the movie. Maybe it was some fundraising thing.
Yeah, could be anything. I mean, yeah, it could have been like, oh, we're gonna be filming here, you know, in the summer, we're gonna be part of the carnival, come on down and, you know, be a part of the film or whatever, who knows. The Shriners are there.
Yeah, I mean, you were also saying that Al Adamson specifically liked using local talent and stuff, so that might have been a way of, like, you know,
casting.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Just scouting,
you know. Yeah, getting people interested in it.
Yeah.
And yeah, we get, as part of the credits, see you next year in more carnival magic.
Yeah, which did not happen. Al Adamson retired, and then I guess no one else could make this happen.
This apparently wasn't a very big hit in theaters, no. So...
It... We should get the sequel soon.
Yeah, right.
Hey, man.
They're making a prequel. We need the prequel.
Yeah.
Timothée Chalamet is young Markov, or
the
whatever.
The Spectacular.
And it's, what's his name that directed Wonka and the Paddington movies, and it takes place in Nepal, and it's like him being raised by the Buddhists and learning to commune with animals, mm-hmm. and...
Who's young and mean?
Young and mean?
Yeah, we can get a young Kirk.
Oh, no, I don't want to do that stupid thing where they've always been enemies and their lives have always been intertwined. That's the laziest thing. It's the same, it's the Skywalker thing. All like, right. Everybody's in the Skywalker bloodline. Hate that shit.
It should be, like, an abstract movie where everyone escapes the carnival and they walk into, like, a big circus tent or something.
There is a fucking shot when the Carney army descends on the research thing, where I was like, this is exactly a shot from Night of the Living Dead, because it's like a slow push in on this house with these Carneys like staggering across the lawn.
It's just weird. Like, the location is so weird in this movie, like the world, I guess. It just feels like we're in some weird dome that they can't get out of. You know what I mean? Like,
I just don't know where anything is. Like, all these things could be like 10 feet from each other. Could be 10 miles. Who the hell knows?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anything else anybody wanted to talk about, or do we want to move on to our rating? Well, if this is your first time listening to Hate Watch, Great Watch, now is the time when we tell you if this is a hate watch or a great watch or somewhere in between. I will go first. This is a watch. It's it's kind of a hate watch because it's not like a terribly interesting movie, unless, you know, again, if this is your kind of jam. You're a monkey movie person, or you're a carnival movie person. Like, these are like your favorite genres or something. But like, it's so weird and discordant and weirdly melodramatic, but not in any way that sticks. But like, I don't hate it. I don't think it's like a bad film. It's just like a goofy ass little thing. It is like a perfect Mystery Science Theater movie. I'm surprised it didn't occur to me that this had already been done on there. So I will have to look that up. But yeah, it's kind of a hate watch, but it made me like Al Adamson. I like the spunk of this, and I like the idea that this was his One For You project,
mm-hmm.
and it's still this weird and also did not do well. Yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely going to look into Al Adamson, I think.
I didn't hate it at all. I don't know. I liked it. I liked the carnival atmosphere. Each scene just kind of felt like a mini game in a way, like,
yeah,
different. Well, they're kind of just skits, right? In a way,
yeah, it's very
like, especially in the second act.
Yeah,
I mean,
barely tied together.
I mean, it's not. I don't know. It's not the greatest movie because it's kind of disjointed and just all over the place. But yeah. I can't hate it.
Sure.
I mean, I guess some of the like the weird things that they do with the women character turns me off, but.
Mm.
Yeah, well, we didn't really mention a lot of... We were sort of watching some of the outtakes, and there was, like, a ton of scenes. They didn't, none of this had sound or dialogue, but, like, there was at least two different or three different scenes set, I guess, in the women's, like, dressing room with Kim and Kate and also clowns who are not present in the rest of the film,
mm-hmm.
that are all women, and they're, whatever these scenes were entirely cut out. There's no version of these scenes in them. A lot of the other stuff that was in the outtakes, even though it didn't have dialogue, was like, oh, this is the scene where these two have this conversation, or this is the scene where this happens. But these scenes with the women, just like, gone. That's not great. And then there's Kim getting beaten up by Kirk, like you were talking about.
For no reason.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything. Like, we already don't like Kirk. He's already an ass. Like,
but I think since there are so many deleted scenes, we're missing story, maybe?
Yeah, I still think there is a chance that Stoney's black eye...
Yeah, like the black eye that you mentioned could have been integral in some way.
But, yeah.
But no, I can't hate the movie.
That's
fair. I don't think it's great, but it's somewhere in the middle.
Sure.
Yeah, I also felt this to be strongly a watch. Like,
sure.
I think it's fun and entertaining. I didn't really feel bored at any point. There was just some times where things were like... silly or didn't make a ton of sense, especially the lack of consequences for the monkey joyride.
Yeah.
You get a lot of animal action and, you know, he does some classic magic tricks and, like, this is all very, like, what you'd want in your carnival movie. So.
Sure.
Sorry, one last thing. This was apparently also released under the name My Friend Alex.
Okay.
I don't know where. Sure. Just that was in the thing that I thought was funny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's not really ha-ha funny.
Okay. That I thought was perhaps of interest.
Yeah. Sure. Well, Aiden, thanks for suggesting this. I, you know, like I said, I owned this. I had not watched it until we were going to do this episode. But when I watched it, I also watched Lost, and I was like, okay. Like, it gave me at least a little more insight into Al Adamson, who I know is, like, some people's, like, jam. Like, you know, when they, whoever was Vinegar Syndrome or whoever sold the box set of his work, it was, like, a big deal. A lot of people were really into it. So, it's cool that I had a really good excuse to watch two of his films. And, yeah, I mean, like, this is fun. It was fun to talk about.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Direct people to, you know, your endeavors or social media or whatever you want to direct them to.
Yeah, I have a couple things coming out. Well, first of all, tomorrow I'm in a snow cone eating contest.
Oh.
No, I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I just feel like, carnival. I wish I was in a snow cone eating contest.
I don't know what you do, you know?
Yeah. Who knows?
My band, before we broke up, I don't know if we're broken up or not, but it's called Obscure Identity. We released a second album in February, and, it has kind of a loose circus atmosphere. It's self-titled. It's on Spotify, anywhere you can get music. But I worked on my own solo album with my friend Trevi Galemo, who is the drummer in Obscure Identity. And that should be coming out probably in September. But we have two singles coming out first. The first one will be released sometime in July. I don't have a date yet. It's called When It's Too Late. You can find it on Spotify. I think I'm just going to have my artist name be Aiden for, I don't know, I have to think about it still.
Yeah.
I have a short film going around some festivals now. It's called Mom Jolie. It's about a mom who's trying to reconnect with her son who doesn't remember her. It's a street film. It takes place in Philadelphia. Yeah, I'm always working on something, so.
Awesome. Allison, do you want to direct anybody to your social media? You've just begun posting on Instagram.
No, I don't.
Unfair. Well, you can get everything you need from us, I guess, from our Linktree. It's linktr.ee/hwgw. It's where to get the episodes, where you can stream the movies if they're streamable. It's how to get in contact with us. It's where to bother Ben, which is exactly like getting in contact with us, except to do it, you bother our friend Ben, which is actually a bonus. So if you click that, it's going to auto-complete the subject line with, I'd pack his lunch. Don't worry about that. You just fill in the body of the email, and Ben will pass along your message to us. So I guess bother Ben with, you know, your favorite carnival stories.
Yeah.
You have a good one, a really bad one, a really weird one, let us know.
Maybe what you think the punishment should be for being a monkey and driving without a license.
Unlicensed.
And possibly killing a guy.
Unlicensed monkey driving, and do you think that guy died? And
should be on Bash.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Beige.
Yeah, should he just be on the Beige, or should it be a harsher sentence?
Oh,
should that monkey be on a chain gang? You let Ben know, and Ben will tell us.
You can get new episodes from us every other Wednesday on MovieJohn.com. That's
every other Wednesday.
MovieJohn.com. And please subscribe to the Movie John Patreon. It helps keep the lights on, and, you know, Movie John's great. Patreon's good. Guess that's it. Yeah, thanks again for coming, Aiden. Allison, thanks for watching this film and recording with me.
Of course.
I am man possessed of will. You are a podcast with none. I will you to end.
Good night.
Good night. 'Cause we made Congo.
Oh yeah,
Congo's good.
I don't remember if I saw that or not. I definitely saw trailers for it. I think
here's how you know Congo's good. Ready? Bruce Campbell's in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all you need to know. Mm-hmm. Now is, you know, the fact that like Ernie Hudson's in it, does that help? Yes, it does. How about Tim Curry's in it doing, I don't even know what accent. It's like the crazy. Have you seen Congo?
No.
It's 90s action. It's based, I think it's based on a Michael Crichton. It's like they go that it has to do with yada yada space lasers for communications. giant diamonds in Midas's like diamond mine in South America. And only monkeys know where it is, I guess. And also, when you get there, there's a tribe of like albino great apes that only exist in the city walls or whatever. It's like crazy. I haven't seen it in years, but it's so fun and stupid. But Tim Curry shows up in it and he's just like chewing all the scenery the entire time. And you're just like, oh my God. Like, it's great. They're all doing accents that are insane.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I can't remember if I've actually, seen this or just seen trailers for it. If I did, I was very young.
I'm taking you on a date to see Congo.
All right.
But I was like, oh, Bruce Campbell. And he's like, hey, everybody, I'm really charming. Oh, I'm dead? All right. But he's in it, so you know it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
This has been a Movie John podcast.